You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Lake Tahoe is known worldwide for its clear waters. People flock to the region to take in its deep blue color and pristine conditions. But that clarity has been on the decline for decades. An annual report that measures the lake's clarity was just released by the UC Davis Tahoe Environmental Research Center. They have been measuring the lake's clarity and other health indicators since 1968. Stephanie Hampton is the director there and joins us today, along with Julie Reagan from the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency, to discuss the recent report, what's been done to address these concerns, and why the lake's health is so important to the region. Stephanie and Julie, welcome to Insight.
Thank you.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Well, Stephanie, absolutely. You are new to the Tahoe Environmental Research Center as the director of a freshwater ecologist. This role seems to be right up your alley. What brought you here?
Oh, it's really exciting. I mean, you know that Lake Tahoe, I think we all consider it the crown jewel for the California and Nevada regions. And it's really an icon in the nation and in the world. So it's always been on my radar that Lake Tahoe would be an amazing place to work. And so when this position came open, I admit that I jumped right at it.
Given that UC Davis has been studying Lake Tahoe for decades now, close to 60 years, why is the clarity of this alpine lake so important?
Well, it's certainly the thing that Lake Tahoe is most famous for. I mean, it's a big blue lake. These are blue, extraordinarily clear waters. I mean, it's funny. I say that to people and everybody knows that. But as a lake scientist arriving here, I'm actually really, really surprised by how clear the water is. I've worked in some of the most pristine lakes in the world. I spent 18 years studying Lake Baikal in Siberia, which is very remote, very well protected, has very clear waters, but Tahoe's clarity really knocks me out. It's a spectacular place and scientifically extremely interesting. And of course, this is, you know, I come here because I'm a scientist, but I know as a private citizen also, I've come here many times to just take in the beauty of this region. And I know that it's a big driver of the economy here.
What does a lake's clarity tell us about the ecosystem and the overall health of not only the lake, but the basin?
Yeah, it's a great indicator of health. I mean, there's many dimensions of a lake's health, but this is a way to kind of quickly, easily get a sense for how healthy a lake is, because a lake will get more murky when you get more algae growing in it. So these are the microscopic plants that live in water. They're naturally occurring in all water, but they'll start to grow sometimes to nuisance conditions when they're getting a lot of excess nutrients, you know, fertilizers or sometimes sewage coming in from the watershed. And so that's why we frequently look at clarity. And of course, we know that sediment can also come into the water from the watershed as well when there's a lot of disturbance in the watershed.
Well, let's turn to this year's report. It was released earlier this week. The headline is that Lake Tahoe's long-term clarity is not trending worse, nor is it improving. So that doesn't necessarily sound like bad news, but it does sound like unsatisfying news. How do you interpret that? I mean, this report good or bad, this year's report?
Well, that's exactly how I would characterize it. I mean, I think especially coming in as a newcomer, my specialty is in looking at long-term data and doing statistical analyses on long-term data. And so when I looked at these data, you see there were steep declines in water clarity through the 1990s. So as you said, we've been monitoring systematically since 1968. And, you know, you don't have to be a scientist to look at these graphs and see that water clarity was declining through the late 90s. And then it just kind of leveled off. I mean, there's a lot of natural variation in these water clarity readings. That's to be expected. I mean, anybody knows when they're trying to lose weight, for example, that, you know, you keep stepping on the scale and you eventually see it trending in the right direction. There's just natural variation that can obscure the trend. But at this point, we've had several decades to look at those data and say, yeah, it just looks like it's kind of leveling off. And so for us as scientists, the question is, why? Why isn't it getting any better? We know that Lake Tahoe is really well protected. The water clarity is extremely important to this region. And so we certainly want to know why. And we've got some ideas for next steps on research.
So this annual average clarity was at 62 feet, give or take a few inches. And that is down from last year's average of 68 feet. But it's also about two-thirds of what the historic peak was, which was 97 feet in terms of being able to see down 97 feet at Lake Tahoe. I know that there are still a lot of question marks about understanding why it's plateauing in recent years, but how have you come to understand why the lake's clarity is still two-thirds of its historical peak?
Yeah, I do not know the answer yet. I think that we can know the answer. So the water clarity, one of the things that we know, we've seen really robust evidence that there are these fine particles in Lake Tahoe or in many or all lakes that affect water clarity. So these are so fine that you cannot see them with the human eye. They're between 1 and 6 micrometers. I mean, it's just beyond description how small these are. And about 20 years ago, there was a very detailed study done by some colleagues at UC Davis to figure out exactly what those particles were that were affecting water clarity so strongly. And they were mostly inorganic sediments coming in from the watershed. And so these might be, you know, you think when you see dust and sediment on the road or they're flowing into the stream or flowing across land, when that big spring melt happens, all the snow melts and the streams really start to rush into the lake. So most of those fine particles were those very fine sediments. Some of them were algae, so those naturally occurring microscopic plants that live in the lake. And the management efforts, as I understand it, really focused on those sediments because of those very robust studies that were done. What we're asking now is 20 years later, is that still the same balance? Is this still mostly sediment, or is it more of a mix of algae, potentially effects of the wildfires, or other changes in the watershed? And so once we see what the nature of those particles are, we can give better information to managers, policymakers who are working in the watershed. And the difference, it really matters, because if it's all sediments, eventually sediments can sink to lower depths in the lake where they're not affecting clarity anymore. Sometimes they aggregate and sink a little faster even. But if they're algae, those are living organisms. And so algae make more algae. And so our expectations for how quickly water clarity would clear up are different depending on what the nature of those particles are.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're learning about the annual clarity report for Lake Tahoe with Stephanie Hampton, the director of the Tahoe Environmental Research Center, which conducts these measurements. We are also joined by Julie Reagan from the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. Okay, Julie, the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency is a unique arm of government in that it's a bi-state compact between California and Nevada, ratified by Congress, balancing restoration, preservation, while also helping local communities in the Tahoe Basin thrive. So it's essentially an environmental planning agency, and it's been around pretty much just as long as this clarity report has been done. What do you do with these annual findings?
Well, thank you for having me on the show. Great to be here. And to follow Dr. Hampton, what we do with the findings is move that into action. And I think that's such an important part of the Tahoe story. Having the benefit of some of the world's greatest scientists study the lake, which was happening in the 1960s, which then galvanized public support to have an interstate compact that's different than any place in the United States to protect the lake. I mean, that in itself is an example of how science has created policies. And it's really a couple of parts. It's one, having regulations in place that you mentioned in your introduction, Vicki. Our organization, Tahoe Regional Planning Agency, we have a 15-member board from both states, a non-voting presidential appointee. We limit development. And so the compact basically set caps on development. We don't allow building in wetlands. So we've got this great framework in place that's a watershed model across multiple states, all these jurisdictions. Having this in place really makes us not have further degradation on the landscape. And then we actually have conserved land. So 90% of the basin is public land. 80% is the Forest Service. We have two states with lands and local lands that people can enjoy. And so limiting development has been a win. On the restoration side, though, because as Dr. Hampton said, a lot of damage was done before we had a compact, before we had rules in place, we actually have to go back and restore the lake. And so these annual clarity reports and the long-term trend analysis helps us better manage restoration. And since the late 90s, almost 30 years now, our collective partnership, we call it Team Tahoe, with federal agencies, tribal, state, local, the private sector, we've put 860 projects on the ground, things that protect water quality, improve stormwater, pollution from getting in the lake. Even transportation projects are really critical because it's not just about transportation. It's about stopping sediment from running from the roadways into the lake, building trails so people have an option not to drive and they can get on their bike or walk to their destination. All of these projects have been put on the landscape through this partnership, and they are helping Clarity get back to its our goal of 100 feet. But the Clarity science really helps us prioritize those projects and make sure we're doing the right things on the ground.
Your agency is incredibly broad. Not only is it an interstate compact, but it, as you laid out, there are more than 80 public and private organizations that are part of the agency. I guess as a whole, I mean, that is a lot of cooks in the kitchen, but how has your agency come to understand the stagnation of the lake's clarity in recent decades?
Well, we're also really concerned because the science said if we reduce a certain amount of nitrogen, phosphorus, and fine particles, we can get back to that standard of 100 feet of clarity. And we have a goal to do that within 50 years from now. So if you look at the big timeline, we've had 50 years of working on this. We've got another 50 years on our goal, but we want to see more improvement. We don't want to just stop the decline, which is where we are. First of all, that's monumental when you have a 39 trillion gallon lake that is one of the clearest lakes in the world still today. But we want to get back to that 100 feet. So we really need to better understand, are we doing all the right things and what else should we be doing? What are the new impacts of fire in the landscape, not just in the basin, but burning all around the West, that fire, might be depositing, that smoke might be depositing on the lake and creating these new changes in the lake's ecosystem. What are the effects of lake temperatures? When I moved to Tahoe in the early 90s, I had to swim in a shorty wetsuit. You don't need a wetsuit to swim in the near shore of the lake. It's warmer. What is the impact of that? All these questions our scientists are helping us answer so that we can stay steadfast in our goal to get back to that 100 feet of clarity. But along the way, we've got interim goals and we call it the Clarity Challenge. And it's something that everyone can rally around because the human condition is hard. Your first interview was so serious. And when you look at what's going on with people in their everyday lives, they need places to go that are transcendent and that can be restorative. And of course, that's what we're all focused on.
Stephanie, I mean, as you and Julie have laid out, there are ongoing challenges impacting the lake's clarity, but there's also new and evolving challenges affecting the lake's clarity, as well as a lot of question marks that you would like to better understand. Given these changing conditions and challenges, is the lake fundamentally different than it was 60 years ago when these clarity reports first started coming out?
Yeah, I think we can say that we've already got the data to say that it's different now than it was when we started. And one of the big differences is as we've just been talking about, is that it's warmer. I mean, that's really, really clear in the lake. And warmer, so it's not only warmer, but the summer is also longer. And these are conditions that can promote the growth of really small algae that can affect water clarity. It can also change the way that those sediments actually move around in the lake and how long they actually stay in the lake in the upper part where it would affect water clarity. So there are, it's clear that there are some key differences now than there were when we first started up here. I do want to say that the good news is that the management actions that Julie mentions and the restoration actions, when they're geared to reduce sediment loading to the lake, they also tend to improve nutrient loading as well, or they tend to reduce the nutrients that come into the lake as well. And that's key for trying to keep the algae from growing too much. So I think we start off in a really good place in trying to move on to the next chapter.
Finally, Julie, in the coming weeks, what do you and your colleagues do with this report?
Well, we have a number of things we're doing. We have this big partnership, as you mentioned, that we're working with the scientists to analyze that data, look at our strategies. Are we doing the right things? What could we do differently? But the big thing is to get the word out. So thank you for starting the conversation with the community. You know, we have a threat of golden mussels. They've been detected in the Delta. We do not want them in Lake Tahoe. Invasive species need to be kept out. Everyone has a role to play in, you know, preventing wildfires, all the things that in loving Lake Tahoe, we do not want to harm the resources. So getting the word out, we have a paper called Tahoe in Depth. We have Lake Tahoe Environmental Improvement Program, enlisting the community and how they can help and better understand the data and be a part of the solution is a big priority for us and for our governing board. And then long term, we're looking at our overall strategic priorities as an interstate compact agency, and then the broader partnership of almost 80 to 100 partners to invest more, to protect the lake more, and to make sure that we are putting the right actions on the ground to protect the clarity and to improve it overall for the long term.
Julie and Stephanie, thank you for taking the time.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Stephanie Hampton is the director of the Tahoe Environmental Research Center at UC Davis. We're also joined by Julie Reagan from the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency, and we've been talking about the annual Clarity Report for Lake Tahoe, which was released earlier this week. Still ahead, stories about the spark of discovery. That's what's in store for audiences at this month's Storytelling Showcase in a nutshell. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.